I'd like to introduce Mr. Gray Barker.
I'd like to welcome all of you and also the FBI agent who is here in the audience, a visitor from space, an alien being who, it is reported, can walk among us unnoticed and disguised and be taken for ordinary humans. And also, I want to say hello to the two men in black in the audience, disguised as fire extinguishers. John Keel is responsible for really publicizing the men in black, I think. People blame me for them because I was the first person to write or and get printed anything about them. And this was a book, They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers, back in 1956, in which I told, among other things, about a man in Bridgeport, Connecticut named Al Bender, who had a big flying saucer or UFO organization and had members all over the world. Suddenly, he closed down this club and sent all the unexpired memberships back without any explanation. When he was contacted, he told us about being hushed up by some mysterious visitors. Now, I'm not going to dwell on this right at the moment because the film I'm going to show is going to tell the story of Al Bender and his encounters with the men in black. But as a background, I thought I would mention that. People ask me, well, if you are writing so much and talking and making speeches about the men in black, they are obviously some sort of strange persons. We don't know where they're from. Some people think they're from the UFOs. Others think they may be from the inner earth, or others from the intelligence community. They say, if you're bearing down so hard on the men in black, what if they hush you up like they hushed so many other people up? And I don't know exactly what the explanation could be. One good one is that I probably just don't know all that much, and they're not too worried about me. Another is that I would rather think is the case. When I was visiting Mr. Bender, the fellow who had the run-in with the men in black back in the 1950s, this was before that experience, and he was going gung-ho with all his research. Some of us visited him in Bridgeport. He lived alone, that was before he was married, but he had a sort of housekeeper who came in maybe once or twice a week and straightened up and helped him some, maybe did a little cooking and that sort of thing for him. I got to talking to the housekeeper, and she drew me to one side, and she looked at me in a very peculiar manner and said weirdly, you know, I can read the human aura, and I can see a protective blue shield around you. Well, that was many years ago, and I wasn't quite as sophisticated about all these things as I am now, and I sort of laughed it off to myself. But at least the men in black, nor any of the other things like abductions, haven't really happened to me. About the same time, the landlady said as an afterthought, looking toward Bender and whispering to me with a frown, she says, I fear for Al because he has a very bad aura. I'll call this talk the Notorious Three, because the three men in black are certainly very notorious and very interesting. I'd like to get into the different forms they seem to take, and obviously it's a pretty complex type of thing that they're involved with. Some of us get rather frightened when we think of these men in black, and I think the reason may be that we can't quite classify them. Now, we hear about the aliens that are reported coming out of the UFOs, and I don't think it gives us the fear that something like the men in black do. Here's, you know, one of the cute little heads representing the aliens. That doesn't seem to frighten us. And then, of course, we might say that Bigfoot, And I think that Bigfoot is definitely connected with the UFO phenomenon. Bigfoot at first glance might be seen to be more frightening because he's about 8 or 10 feet tall and is hairy like an ape. Sometimes they have ugly fangs and a terrible sulfuric-type odor. But at least Bigfoot is, at least for me, more of a physical horror. We can say, well, he's probably an experimental animal these euphonauts release from the flying saucers and then maybe give them tests later and monitor them to see how they get along in our atmosphere. Of course, a very unusual thing about the Big Feet is that, like some of the UFOs themselves, they can seem to just vanish all of a sudden, especially when they're shot at and hit with bullets. The carcass is never there when you go to pick it up. And it seems to be a part of this very strange flying saucer phenomenon. So we can classify Bigfoot as maybe some sort of a physical or a paraphysical entity, but still we don't know quite who the men in black are. Now, their connections with UFOs is not just direct. We haven't seen them getting in or out of one, to my knowledge. But generally, many people, after having particularly close sightings of UFOs in the daytime, just not some light in the sky, but close up where they might see windows and some good detail, especially where they have pictures of them, have been visited by three men usually, and they usually dress in black clothing, sometimes even black hats. And these people are sort of threatened not to tell about their sightings or to not to do various things, and sometimes even to give up their pictures that they've taken. It was a young boy out in Long Island in the 69 that had some excellent close-up pictures of UFO. This poor kid worked in a fast food place and got home pretty late at night, and one night as he walked in, everybody was in bed. These three men confronted him and threatened him, and he gave up the negatives of these pictures. And we have something in the film about that later. The men in black have a definite tradition about them. Besides driving, dressing in black, usually, they often drive huge black automobiles. Black Cadillacs are their favorites, or it can be any large car. And even though some of these cars that they run around in look like old models, people that have been close to them have got that new car smell. You know what a new car smells like. There's a definite smell to the interior. And it seems as if they're brand new, yet very old models. Almost, if we can go a bit wild, as if they've been materialized suddenly into our own frame of existence by someone who is sort of even duplicating a certain model of an older car. They don't necessarily have to come three at a time, or even two at a time. We have many good reports of very strange men in black showing up singly. Recently, in my book, which is coming out soon, called the MIB, I tell of a physician in New England whose family was out to the movies one night, and when he received a phone call, ostensibly from some UFO organization nearby, and although he never usually entertained anyone at the house, something told him to tell the guy to come on over and he would talk to him. But when the fellow got there, I don't have my notes on this, but this is a very weird looking fellow, all dressed in black. And he looked as if his eyebrows were painted on, and he had a derby hat on, and talked in some sort of a sing-song voice. He threatened the doctor to give up some tapes that he had. The doctor had done some therapy with a person who had seen UFOs and had been disturbed by them. And the doctor had done some hypnotic work with this person and had the tapes of this around the house. The strange little man threatened him and wanted the tapes. And when the doctor was reluctant to give them the tape, the man asked him for a coin. And I think the doctor gave him a dime. And he said, here, hold this in your hand. And the doctor held it in his hand, and the little men in black zapped or something. And anyhow, there was a glow in the doctor's hand, and his coin just disappeared. And he told the doctor to the effect that if he didn't give up the tapes, that might be what would happen to him. So the doctor gave him the tapes, and I would have too. About that time, the little men in black, I say little because he's probably about 5 feet tall, began to sort of slow down and slur his sing-song, mechanical-like voice, as if it were some sort of an animated doll of some sort of running out of steam or running its batteries down. And the creature or person excused himself very quickly and left. And as soon as he had walked out the door, the doctor saw a huge glow out on one side of his house. And then as he looked out the window, he saw a huge black car drive away. So that is an instance of one man in black coming and being very threatening and very even evidently threatening somebody's life. Here is an instance from my book, and I'm just going to read a few words to you, not all of them. A typical report of a Mr. Brian Leithley Andrew in England. And this newspaper report says, he shut down his UFO information bureau, a frightened man. Since he opened the bureau in Coventry in September, he has, he claims, one, been watched by a man with a glowing orange face, had his telephone cut off when he attempted to talk about UFOs, received a phone message from a caller speaking unusual English, and I think fifth, been worried by sudden fluctuations in the lights of the house he was visiting. Well, when he gave all of it up and destroyed all of his papers, these weird incidents stopped happening, and the electricity was normal, and he didn't see the little man with the glowing face, and everything was pretty normal. So this fellow became very frightened and evidently was visited by some sort of a creature that seems to be something like a man in black. Dr. Morris K. Jessup, who is going to be the subject of a fascinating presentation later on in connection with a new book called The Jessup Dimension, which has just come out. In one of his books, he published a very strange account that happened in the state U.S. State Department. Is that Jessup was a little bit, he was a scientist, I guess not a writer or an editor, but not a writer or an editor. He was a little bit sloppy on giving proper credit as to where this came from. The clipping that he printed in the UFO Annual only says it was from Grinnell's column, G-R-I-N-N-E-L-L-S, I believe it was. Column started out by the columnist, evidently, I would think maybe a small-town newspaper columnist. He was in Washington rubbernecking and visiting all the public buildings. Well, it came time to visit the State Department. Of course, there's not much to see there. It's not really public. So he did walk up into the huge lobby of this building, and there was a security guard started watching him because I guess they sort of watch people come in there because there's not an official tour of any sort available. And as soon as the security guard came toward him to ask him who he's looking for, suddenly the elevator opened and the guard turned his attention to the elevator. And coming out of the elevator were two men, evidently State Department escorts, in their traditional gray suits, I guess, double-breasted, and three other men walking with them. But the three other men struck me as a little odd. They wore long black cloaks, big slouch hats with wide brims pulled down over their faces, and carried portfolios. They looked for all the world like cartoon representations of cloak and dagger spies. I suppose that they were some sort of, he thought that they might be some sort of foreign diplomats. But the floor was marble and highly polished, as anyone would know that's visited all the public monuments. And suddenly one of these strange men in black slipped and fell. and the man fell right near the person that's writing the column. And he says, being closest to him, I scooped up the portfolio and was the first to help raise him to his feet. Grasping his arms, I hoisted him from the floor. He seemed to be astonishingly weak in the knees. His companions stood about rather flustered, but their faces curiously impassive. They didn't express any emotion. And the man who fell, his face never seemed to alter expression. Just at that time, two State Department people that were escorting these three men ran up and took over the man that he had helped up and sort of ushered him out of there. And he concludes, and if you ever, when this book comes out, you can read the rest of it, hopefully. He concludes by saying that he got the most unusual feeling that the creature that he picked up, that underneath the suit, that he was very woolly. I don't know how, I guess by feeling through the suit, that was a woolly creature instead of a person, and that he was sure it was wearing a mask because there was some sort of a fastener to the back of the head. So there's a real good one for you. The men in black don't always look weird, and it can also be a misnomer, but I think it's a part of the same tradition, or at least we associate these other kinds of beings or people with the men in black tradition. John Keel first uncovered this incident of a Lieutenant Frank Davis of the U.S. Air Force, supposedly, who had got some people together in Pennsylvania in a small town and got them into a schoolhouse and warned them not to talk about the sighting that was experienced there about the several people maybe in the week before. I know that this happened because the Air Force circulated a paper, some sort of directive to all the bases pointing out that there were impersonators, someone in Air Force uniform, evidently impersonating Air Force personnel and threatening people about UFOs. And it was directed to watch out and report anything like this happened. Upon further checking, I won't identify a particular little town. It might identify my source, who is in the school system there and doesn't want to get connected with this anyway. It was really took place at a PTA meeting in a small school in the cafeteria. Usually that's the place where, in a small school, where you have your programs, this little stage in. There had been a sighting, a very dramatic sighting there the week before, and a Air Force spokesman had requested that he be able to speak to the PTA about UFOs, and of course they sort of welcomed this thing. And a man identifying himself as Frank Davis, Lieutenant Frank Davis, in uniform, got up and began talking. He had been accompanied there by two other, evidently, Air Force officers who came in a van. They didn't come inside the school. They stayed in the van. This seemed to be a rather routine type of talk that Davis gave. He began by saying that reading the standard Air Force explanations that the Air Force had investigated these things and felt that they did not constitute a threat to us. But then he gradually got into the sighting of the past week and encouraged people to stand up if they had any more information about it. And evidently people were too shy to or didn't stand up, so there wasn't anyone that volunteered any more information to Lieutenant Davis. And then Lieutenant Davis began talking further, and he turned the tone of his talk into at first a subtle kind of suggestion that this not be talked about outside the community and that they should not talk to reporters about it. Then a rather odd thing happened. They said that his voice, the pitch of his voice got slightly higher, and he seemed to talk faster. It was almost like, you know, a tape recording and you get on through mistake or record for the wrong speed. Not exactly like it, but it was weird. And all of a sudden, this guy sort of collapsed. And there was a doctor there in the cafeteria, but before he could get up and get to this guy, these two other officers ran in very quickly, grabbed this guy and carried him out, and put him in the van and they drove away. Now, I don't know, this could be just ordinary Air Force people, but it seems weird, and the Air Force explained this thing. Now, here's the part I don't believe. One of the witness's friends was sitting right on the aisle as they carried this guy out, sort of supine, and as they carried him out, this witness noticed that his pants leg had come up, and he had a rather short sock on. And from the top of his sock up the pants leg, there was a green wire running. I don't know, maybe this was some sort of electrical supply to his feet. But those are strange things, and no one can seem to explain. And if you talk to most people about this sort of thing, they'll say you're crazy, and everyone tends to forget about them. So we've had, we continue to have, stories from people, and I get maybe one letter a week from people who claim that they've been frightened by phone calls or people following them, or this or that. And here's one, it may not be Men in Black, but it's very much like it. Among the interesting letters I'm receiving is one from a girl who's now sort of grown out of that stage, but when she was a young teenager, she was so fascinated by UFOs, and probably over so, that she spent many, many nights a week just staying up all night and driving around, and she would see these things, lots of them. Evidently, must have had some magnetism that pulled them in so she could see them, or else she might have been misinterpreting, I don't know what. But anyhow, she was very deeply involved in seeing these things. And she would go out by herself, which I don't urge any of you to do. I think if you're out looking for UFOs, you should have someone along with you, if only to avoid the very mundane thing that happened to this gal. She was driving this very lonely road, and she noticed that there wasn't any traffic. And she was hoping how soon she got off of it onto a main road when she skidded, and the rear wheels of the Volkswagen went in a ditch, and she was stuck there in this very lonely place, and she spun, but she couldn't get out. It seemed to be impossible, and it would seem it would be very unlikely there'd be any help come because there was no traffic. But all at once, out of the darkness, a huge car, I don't know whether it was black or not, she couldn't tell, drove up, just vroom, right up out of nowhere, stopped. Three big men jumped out of it, ran to the back of the car, and lifted the wheels out of the ditch very easily, put it back up on the road, without even speaking to her or having her see what they looked like, jumped back in this big car and seemed to take off. We hope that if we get stuck, that will always happen to us, that someone, Dr. X, whom I talk to quite often, who's a retired university professor, tells me, these people can't help people here, or else, no one would ever get sick, these space people. And they have a rule of non-interference. I'm talking about the good space people, not the Men in Black. But he says, they have their pets, and if you were out on a very lonely road some night, they might come around and lift you out. I sort of doubt it, but I hope so. I never try to get in that position. The Men in Black become more complicated because particularly during the 50s, that time at Bender was hushed up. We had, I think, a great deal more interest by the intelligence communities than we have now, particularly with the FBI. I know this because I've seen, through the Freedom of Information Act, a lot of us have seen some of those documents, and I do know that the FBI even was attending meetings of the Detroit Flying Saucer Bureau, a very small group up there back in the 50s. And even today, I think that there are some intelligence people maybe interested in what we're seeing, and certainly interested in UFOs. And that some people may have misinterpreted visits from say, FBI agents or even CIA agents as men in black, and they sort of complicated. And it could be that the case of Bender was a case of his really knowing something and being hushed up by the government, although he says not and gives a different explanation. But the government agents could not explain the men in black entirely, certainly not back through history. And we've had men in black as long as we've had UFOs, and we've had them since the dawn of recorded history. UFO editor Alan H. Greenfield has pointed out that there is usually a consistent reference associating the term with the devil, the men in black with the devil, along with a mention of an Indian-like appearance supposedly attributed to the devil by witches. Greenfield has noticed that there was a concentration of such cases beginning at the time of the Elizabethan post-Reformation era of the 1600s. Several occult volumes classify these beings into a group of their own and refer to them as men in black, demons, devils, apparitions, or black men, the latter being the most commonly used. The famous witch hunter Cotton Mather mentions a man in black associated with Indians, and there was a mention of a man dressed in black during the witch trials in Salem, Massachusetts. In a book I published, Virginia Brasington and Flying Saucers in the Bible, repeated what may be folklore, and I don't take this as 100% accurate, but according to this legend, we were looking and deciding on the design for a great seal for the United States, which appears, of course, on the currency, and it couldn't be agreed as to what the seal would look like. And Thomas Jefferson was walking alone one night in his garden when he was approached by a mysterious fellow wearing a flowing black cape. And it wasn't Frank Langella or other Draculas. The visitor allegedly handed him a parchment on which was described the basic design which became the official seal of our country. I don't believe that, but it's a nice story.